You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
I'm sitting in JISC's London office with Professor Martin Harrow, Chief Executive of JISC, the HE Technology Charity. Professor Harrow, I say HE Technology Charity, it sounds pretty vague, but the title of the report, JISC, A Hidden Advantage for Higher Education, sort of gets to the root of why this report exists, doesn't it? People don't really know, a lot of people don't know, what JISC is and what it does. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think there is a great deal of truth in that, and that really goes back to the history of JISC. I mean, it wasn't started with a grand design. It was started by enlightened investment through the funding bodies across the UK, all the UK, and a willing band of innovators some 20-plus years ago. And as it's a very British way, what has grown up is something which is incredibly valuable and a major asset for higher and further education in the UK. But because it's grown up, because it's kind of always been there, and because it's been funded centrally, it hasn't really been necessary to either shout about it or really to have a clear frame of reference that demonstrates to everybody the value that they get. So yes, it is a little bit off the radar. And of course, with the changing climate that we're now operating in, it's very important that we do recognise these kind of assets where we have them and make sure that we preserve, protect and develop them further for the future and don't lose them by default.
There's a bit of a theme in this report that the JISC is a sort of unsung hero at times. I mean, I point to some of the successes, the launch of Janet 6, a major infrastructure for the UK's HE sector, delivered, as far as I recall, on time, on budget. I used to work in healthcare journalism, and the NHS is a beacon of how not to do these large infrastructure projects. And in many cases, that's when they make the headlines, isn't it? If you do something well, it can slip, as you say, under the radar a little.
Yes, I mean, you could argue, I probably would argue, that JISC to some degree has been a victim of its own success in matters like that. I mean, Janet 6 is a very good example. It's the single biggest investment made through JISC in recent times, and it was, as you say, delivered extremely well, and without disruption, not just on time and on budget, but without disruption. In fact, as the switchover came, other than the improved access, people didn't even know it had happened. And that's, as you say, not characteristic of major IT investment projects. Another more recent example is the shared data centre, which supports the Francis Crick and a number of other London-based research-intensive universities.
And hopefully more widespread universities over time.
And more widespread universities over time. We hope, obviously, we've started the snowball rolling there. But again, delivered very seamlessly, on time, very smoothly. And so the crisis doesn't happen, and therefore you don't tend to get the publicity around it. On the whole, though, I think we're much more satisfied to be that way around. But it is incumbent on us, because we are investing this money, it is incumbent on us, I think, to make the value clear, to make it transparent what has been achieved and the value that it returns, because obviously people can't make informed decisions about the longer term future unless they see and understand that value.
And this is presumably part of why this report's come out now. It's because JISC is changing. It used to be centrally funded, it was available to all universities. They didn't notice it because they didn't have to think about it. But we're in year two, I think, of 3 years of compulsory subscription for universities, and after that, the great unknown. Universities won't be obliged to subscribe to JISC, and that's presumably quite a scary moment for you as the head of this organisation, making sure they stick with you.
Well, not scary. I would say, in a way, it's an opportunity because I think it's making us focus, and not just within JISC on what we do and how we do it and our own practices, but making us focus on the engagement with the sector and the development of a real frame of reference, metrics, analytics and so on, where we can really measure and prove to ourselves, let alone with our colleagues across the sector, that what we're doing is right, good, that we're focusing on the right things, making a real impact with those things, doing them really well, and that managing the life cycle, if you like, of those things, so that, you know, as things go through into a mature phase, keep checking, is it appropriate for just to keep doing this? Should we even be stopping doing it? Should we be maybe finding a different way for it to be achieved that's not by JISC and this kind of thing? So I think, it is an opportunity if we get it right. But as with all opportunity, there are risks, and new potential pitfalls. And if we don't get all that kind of work done well, and we don't get the debate at the right level in the sector, the strategic and policy level, there is obviously still the possibility, anyway, that unforeseen consequences. Nobody is setting out clearly in any of the changes currently going on, either those driven by our policy and development of the sector generally, or those things which are just happening in the world at large. Nobody's setting out to destroy the UK's digital infrastructure, but we obviously need to make sure that in the context of those changes we do recognise what we have and we do make the right decisions about it going forward.
In his foreword to this report, Nick Hillman, who's the director of HEPI, I should say, who produced and authored, produced this report, authored by your good self. He does sort of point out there is a risk after this 3-year compulsory period that some institutions do not subscribe, perhaps because, he says, of short-term decision-making, they opt to look elsewhere. If they can make a quick saving, perhaps, over the service JISC is offering, they will do. Is this something you're looking at closely? I mean, how do you prepare for losing customers that previously you were guaranteed to retain?
Yes, it's a very key issue, and Nick is quite right to highlight it. I think the point about it that makes it particularly challenging is that JISC is not an advisory service, although it does give advice. It's an operational service. We provide infrastructure that people in universities use every single day, and every single person in university accesses every single day, although they don't necessarily see that. So this is not just a kind of debate about, maybe I could say 5 pence here or 10 pence there. This is a debate about the fact that without access to these services, we have the opportunity not only to threaten the integrity of the infrastructure for those who are subscribing, but have winners and losers among those who've got access to these services and those who haven't. So it's quite important stuff. And there are really operational risks for universities in making some of those choices. What makes it particularly challenging, though, and this is the second point on this, is the whole point that because these services have always been there and accepted, as I was saying earlier, the value and the contribution that those services make is not as explicitly understood as it could be. But even worse, no one person or one part of the organisation has a clear picture of all the services that they are themselves accessing and using. And that's something we're trying to rectify. Obviously, we're doing a lot of work to try to make sure we can show each institution exactly what they use and get from their GIST services. But so the IT director will have a perspective, the library director will have a perspective, but many academics in the institution will be accessing services that they won't necessarily recognise as GIST services, which neither the library director or the IT director would necessarily know about. So all those considerations make it quite problematic for people in a university in a subscription model that goes voluntary to make an informed decision about whether they would or wouldn't want to subscribe. And obviously, therefore, it's a real imperative for us to be able to, during this period where there is a mandated subscription, to do the work in close consultation with our colleagues across the sector to be sure that that information is available, is understood, and therefore a properly informed choice can be made.
And what will that choice look like 2 years in the future when it's no longer compulsory? Will there be the option for universities to unbundle, I think is the word used, unbundle services, pick and choose the ones that they like, leave behind the others? Or will it be an in or out question, if you like? You either take everything or you're not subscribing at all.
Well, the point is perhaps not entirely understood, and again it goes back to the whole point about some of these things not being understood, is that quite a lot of GIST services already are voluntary, if I can put it like that. People choose whether they want to take them or use them or not. But there is obviously a large core of the infrastructure services in technology and in digital resources that are part of the current core bundle. And it is always a very difficult judgment call for businesses who have those kind of characteristics. Because if you don't have enough in the core that most or preferably all people subscribe to, you threaten the integrity of the total structure of the business and its ability to provide all those things efficiently and effectively day after day after day and be there reliably. And so, you have that pressure. The pressure from the consumer or the customer end is typically, well, I'd like to just pick out the bits that I'd really like. And you need to get a balance between those things. And I think the way we have to approach resolving that is, again, in intense dialogue with our colleagues about the services, about the value of those services, about what makes sense to in packaging those services for JISC itself to be viable on their behalf. I mean, we must remember that JISC is the company of the sector. It's populated by people in the sector. Our board is from the sector. It's owned by bodies in the sector. We are of the sector, for the sector, and we need to be sure, therefore, that everybody in the sector is able to sort of fully participate in the discussion about what makes sense in the end for each institution and for the sector as a whole in getting that balance right between core and voluntary. And that, you know, may mean some differences over where we are today, clearly.
Sure. I mean, that's obviously, if you win that argument, that discussion, you make clear your benefits, it'd be a great success. You must have considered the other side of the coin, though, the sort of worst case scenario. What if 10, 20, 30% of universities sort of decide not to continue, either at the level they're subscribing now or subscribing at all? Have you run those scenarios through? Do you have a sort of level that you need to maintain to keep your economies of scale, to keep functioning?
Well, we've done work in that area, clearly, and there's more work to do, for sure, in that area. But I think that also leads back to this paper. It says, you know, that would obviously be starting down a road that has its risks for the UK in total and for every institution in the UK. And so, you know, before we kind of get to that point, let's try to prompt a good discussion strategically about do we even want to go down that road, or should we say, look, this is a really important asset. We need to regulate it properly, we need to ensure it's managed properly, we need to be sure it's efficient, we need to review it from time to time and be sure we're getting what we need. Absolutely, we've got to have all that. But we don't actually want to lose it, so we do want to find a sustainable way that everybody can participate and that we add value for the sector as a whole and every institution on a reliable way. Because then we can turn our attention to how we do more and better, rather than worries day to day about how we can keep the current infrastructure running. Mm-hmm. And I think there are big opportunities ahead for the UK to set a higher level of ambition for its digital infrastructure, even over what we've achieved today. And in the fiercely competitive world we're now in, and we'll get worse no doubt in that regard, I think this is a potential way to keep the UK at the very forefront in global competition.
Mm. You'll need support to do that, of course, as well, and not least perhaps from the government in the way it invests in science and research. Going back to the paper, there's a quote I picked out. It states the government has acknowledged in consultations on long-term capital funding the importance of funding for science and research. Continual upgrade is required for the challenges of tomorrow. But it goes on to say that at this very moment, this is your report, goes on to say, at this very moment, our historic investment in digital is perhaps at its most valuable. And we should be looking to the future and seeking to build on our current advantage. An unfortunate combination of circumstances means that instead we could be sleepwalking into disaster by losing the world-leading infrastructure we already have. That sounds that's quite strongly worded, isn't it? It sounds there that you have some doubts about the way maybe government approaches investment in research and in technology for research.
Yes, I perhaps wouldn't entirely draw that conclusion from it. That wording is indeed slightly apocalyptic and it would catch a headline, but I don't think we really feel apocalyptic about it. I think we feel very confident this is entirely doable. You know, we can, I'm sure. I mean, if you look at it in, you know, the higher education sector contributes 5% of gross domestic product. The amount of cost to fund JISC is only about a third of the value, just the financial savings value delivered to the sector. Mm-hmm. You know, this should be a solvable problem. We just need to have the dialogue in the sector and say, what makes sense here? If we really think this is important, what makes sense? How are we going to turn JISC into a sustainable long-term proposition with the right kind of controls and pressures on efficiency and focus to be sure that the institutions in the UK continue to benefit from this asset? And indeed, as I said, that we can turn our attention to how we do more, actually get more value for institutions in the UK out of it. So I think it's a question through this paper of trying to get that mature debate going, but evidence-based. You know, and that's why we're doing so much work on trying to tease out, you know, the metrics, the analytics, and the real stories underneath, which in times past were not so necessary, so it clearly didn't get the same level of attention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your university in a box concept, which is also featured in the report.
Yes. I mean, I think this is just trying to give an indication of the way we could develop things. I mean, the role of JISC is to take on, really, the things at the UK level it makes sense to do once for everybody with digital technology. And as the technology capabilities change and develop, then obviously the possibilities there develop. We have a priceless asset in the UK in the Janet network. It's world class. It's as good as anything in the world. And it gives us the fundamental platform on which we could build other value-adding services. The shared data center I mentioned a while ago is a very good example of how we've been able to solve a major problem for some of the research-intensive universities in the Francis Crick in London by using the network and therefore being very cost-effectively able to sit on it, a new shared data center that makes such a difference and is light years more cost-effective than every institution doing their own thing, and also adds an ability for researchers to share and work together with their data, which can lead to new research outcomes that would again be much more difficult when data is spread across lots of locations. I think we can take those kind of concepts further. Mm-hmm. Why, for example, could we not provide data center architecture for all of the high performance computing and data centers all across institutions in the UK in further and higher education? How many hundreds of millions could possibly be improved in terms of cost effectiveness if we did something like that? Take it further, you can see, you know, why all the back office systems that everybody has to run for themselves, or the costs or the effort involved in doing that, and some of the inadequacies indeed of those systems, which anyone who's ever worked with them will know full well, why can't we start to say, well, why couldn't we do a private cloud service for higher and further education in the UK with a set of tuned back office systems to their needs and deliver it as a shared service, meaning that the internal resources don't need to do all that work. And so you're going to have a cost-effectiveness benefit there. But also that the internal resources can turn their attention from running day-to-day operational systems, which only adds a certain amount of value, clearly, to saying, how can I now put something on top of that infrastructure that's just provided for me? I don't need to worry about it. Some develop some creative new digital applications or offerings that would add distinctive value for my particular institution, given my particular institution a profile in its market with its customers or its research communities, something different and distinctive. And those sort of things tend to get missed sometimes when you're doing all the day-to-day operational stuff. You don't have the time or the capacity for bright, able people to turn their attention to that kind of value-adding, competitive edge stuff. So I think there's lots and lots of benefits we could do here. We could take a lot of cost out, and we could shift the emphasis for individual institutions into stuff that was more directly associated with their competitive positioning and less about day-to-day operational things. So that's really what the University in a Box concept is just trying to tease out. It's not just about, therefore, protecting what we already have. It's about saying, actually, what we have is good enough to go further.
And, of course, all of this boils down, if you like, to making life easier for researchers and the sort of research side of universities, but also improving teaching and learning for students.
Yeah, absolutely. And, just going back to that university in a box idea, there's no reason, of course, why that service couldn't involve some of the learning environments and learning support beyond MOOCs, beyond current VLEs. I think there's quite a lot we could do in that kind of area as well. And again, I'd like to see the UK have something a bit distinctive there. And I think, you know, there are a lot of ideas about we could take that further. And JISC itself has a lot of track record in online learning at scale, so we could bring a lot to that discussion from that point of view as well. And ultimately, you know, one of the really key things here is what I would distinguish as the digital student experience as distinct from the student experience. Mm-hmm. It's a really key component, and an ever more key component. And I think the really important characteristic about it, which has been very well demonstrated by the success of our Summer of Student Innovation, where students themselves were coming up with the ideas about what they think they would like as their learning environments. What we're talking about there is students being able to bring their own device, work in ways they want to use any tools they want to use, but to make that complementary to and integral to their total learning experience in the institutions. And again, JISC has got a lot of expertise in that area, and I think we could, I'd like to set the objective actually, that making the UK the most distinctive digital student experience in the world across its universities. I think that would be an ambition to go for.
A very bold one indeed. The new report is available. It's called JISC, A Hidden Advantage for Higher Education, and is produced by HEPI. But thank you very much, Professor Martin Harrow, Chief Executive of JISC, for speaking to me today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.